Hello and welcome to Inside the NYPD, the official podcast of the New York City Police Department, broadcasting from police headquarters in Lower Manhattan to our listeners around the world. In this edition, the one-of-a-kind NYPD Real-Time Crime Center and defensive driving advice from Police Academy driving instructors. I'm Jesse Peterman. In July 2005, the NYPD unveiled the Real-Time Crime Center, a crime-fighting tool unique in the world of law enforcement. The Real-Time Crime Center can put powerful information at the fingertips of investigators in an instant, culling information from scores of different law enforcement databases. The NYPD's Jason Post spoke to the commanding officer of the Real-Time Crime Center, Chief Joseph D'Amico.
Chief, what does the Real-Time Crime Center do?
The Crime Center is a 24-hour resource for the detectives. We provide investigative information to the detectives at the scene of a crime, investigating shooting, homicide, and other violent crime.
What did detectives do to get this information before the Crime Center existed?
Well, before the Crime Center and the technology existed, we had a lot of data that we've collected in the police department going back over the last 20, 25 years, but we had very limited access to it. And, you know, we had somewhere in the area of 55 databases where detectives had to go in and out of the databases searching the same name or the same location. And when they responded to the scene of a crime, they'd actually have to go back to their office to do all the queries through a database. It was very time-consuming. What they do now is they do a simple query in the crime center for a person or a location, and they get back large amounts of data, and it's provided to the detectives electronically at the scene. We could give them histories of locations, histories of incidents, people who've been arrested there, criminals who reside there, people who are on parole. We could provide them photos electronically through handheld devices at the scene of a crime. So what we've done is we've taken all this technology that we've amassed and we put it into a format so we could deliver it to the crime scene.
Does the Real-Time Crime Center have the ability to go mobile?
Yes, through the use of investigative response vehicles that are manned by the Detective Bureau Homicide Squads, we're able to provide all this investigative information electronically at the scene of a crime. Each of these vans are completely self-powered. They have wireless access using broadband technology. We can send them data. We can send them maps. We can send them photographs. They respond to almost every violent crime incident in the city.
Since the Crime Center's been up and running, do you have any success stories you want to share with podcast listeners?
Sure, I could tell you how we've combined this new technology and all this data in partnership with good old-fashioned policing to solve crime. An example was we had an armed robbery of a pizza restaurant in Midtown Manhattan a number of months back. Just before closing, mail came into the restaurant and produced a handgun and robbed the manager of the day's receipts. As the male fled from the scene, the manager noticed he had a tattoo on his neck with the word sugar in the tattoo. Robbery detectives responded to the scene, conducted their investigation. They showed the victim photographs. They conducted a canvas for witnesses. They compared it to other crimes. And they used the only ability they had to query nicknames, and they came back only with females with prostitution history with the name Sugar. In the crime center, we were able to access the data and query the description of the tattoo. And we were able to find a male with a violent robbery background who fit the description, who had a tattoo with the word sugar on his neck, able to provide a photograph to the detectives in the field who showed it to a witness, got an identification, and within about 3 days, they had him arrested. And they believed he was doing other robberies as well.
Are there any other advancements that you have in the works here in the Real-Time Crime Center?
Yes, we're in the process of setting up a system to provide digital audio out to the field to the investigators. And what I mean by that is all of our 911 calls are digitized. It's stored digitally on a system. We'll be able to go in for any case that we help the detectives with, such as shootings and homicides, and actually pull the audio from the 911 call and provide it to the detectives electronically through our portal. And the detectives at the scene will actually be able to hear the 911 call. They'll be able to hear the words maybe that weren't typed in by the operator, or they'll be able to actually hear the 911 caller's voice. So, you know, possibly when they're interviewing witnesses at the scene, you know, they'll identify a witness from a voice. So it's really a breakthrough in technology.
Chief Joseph D'Amico, the commanding officer of the Real-Time Crime Center, thank you very much for joining us.
On July 9th, five people were killed when their car jumped a highway median on the Bronx River Parkway. The five dead, including a six-year-old, had left a basketball tournament and were on their way home. On July 12th, another five people were killed on Cross Bay Boulevard in Queens when their van struck a tree, traveling at a high rate of speed. These recent tragic crashes are reminders of the importance of safe driving. The department's driver training unit instructs department personnel in the safe operation of all types of vehicles, including radio cars, scooters, motorcycles, trucks, passenger vans, and other specialized vehicles, even bicycles. With safe driving tips you may not be aware of, here is Jason Post with Police Academy driver training instructors.
Detective Ross Paternostro and Police Officer Dan Donza are veteran driving instructors. If a driver is involved in a crash, what advice do you offer that driver?
In the event of a crash, try to steer away from the passenger or driver compartment, aim toward the back of the car. Look for a safer, softer cushion. There are other options instead of hitting something broadside. In the event of a loss of control or a crash, don't aim for the tree. Get your eyes off the tree and onto something softer. Well, the hands have a tendency to follow where the eyes are looking.
What we usually try to tell most of the people that come to driver training is always try to remember this simple rule: stomp, stay, and steer. Stomp on the brake, stay on the brake, and steer where you want the car to go. Usually that will allow you an extra option as to where you can place your vehicle rather than getting involved right into the accident.
Giving yourself an out. What should people keep in mind when the thought is give yourself an out?
Hazards appear unexpectedly and happen in fractions of seconds. If you're not prepared for that hazard before it happens, you're going to get into a crash. So prior to a crash, if you think back to a crash, the 15 or 20 seconds before that crash, if you would have changed something or did something different, that crash would have never happened. And the best thing that you could probably do for yourself is to give yourself space, give yourself some time, leave yourself an out, give yourself an option, maybe a different lane, change a lane, use the shoulder, anything to avoid that hazard.
What role does excessive speed play in car crashes?
The speed itself allows you to lose control of the vehicle, but having that speed also gives you a shorter period of time in which to make those decisions in order to try to get you out of that accident.
It is the law to wear a seatbelt when driving a car, and police officers are required to wear a seatbelt whenever they're driving a department vehicle and perform seatbelt enforcement to give out summonses when people are in violation. Is there any trick to properly wearing your seatbelt?
When you sit down in the seat, make sure everyone is buckled up properly. Wear it snug. A lot of people have a tendency to wear heavier clothes in the wintertime and things of that nature, and they don't pull that belt snug. The seatbelt should be snug against the body, along the waist, and across the shoulder. And that's the proper way to wear a seatbelt, snug, not tight. It's there for a reason. Wear it, and it affords you the best protection.
As far as police officers are concerned, we have the uniform and the gear that you wear. Most police officers do not drive the same vehicle every single day. When you do enter the car, make sure that the seatbelt is not tangled into the retractor. Make sure the seatbelt is free of any kind of tangles or turns or twists. Once that's done, it'll allow it to flow freely in front of you.
What should members of the public know about those occasions when police officers use lights and sirens to get to the scene of an emergency?
First thing we ask for is the public's cooperation. Upon hearing the sirens and seeing the lights, we ask you to try to yield the right of way. Try to give us a little bit of a break on that, making sure that it keeps you safe as well as it keeps us safe.
Detective Paternostro and Police Officer Donza of the Police Academy Driver Training Unit, thank you very much for joining us.
Finally, a word on joining the NYPD. The NYPD offers a job with a future, a great place to serve, and a chance to advance. For more information, call 212-RECRUIT or visit us on the web at www.nypdrecruit.com. Thank you for listening to the New York City Police Department podcast. For Inside the NYPD, I'm Jesse Peterman.